21st of March. I'm Andrew O'Connor, and you're listening to Game On with myself and Ruby Walsh.
Coming up between now and the new music show at 7pm, it's Gaelic football, soccer and rugby all the way as Aspen O'Malley, Alan Cawley and Keane Tracy reflect on the weekend that was.
All of that and the rest of today's news, plus it wouldn't be Monday without the rest of your weekend sporting headlights. If you want to have your say, you can send us a text on 51552 or WhatsApp us on 087 187 9200.
This is 2FM's Game On.
Well, Ruby, that was an adventurous start. It's always good when you're about to start a radio programme to actually turn the studio on.
And, is that how it works, yeah?
That's generally how it works. And I had two highly paid technicians come in just a second ago to tell me that very thing. So here I am, well told, the studio's on and we can begin the programme. Apologies.
I prefer the old theme tune as well, did you?
I do prefer the old theme tune, but that's probably an ecumenical matter. And we should probably move swiftly on. It is some word I'm delighted to say. As usual, we are joined by Alan Cawley and Austin O'Malley. Good, happy Monday, gentlemen.
Evening, men. How's all?
Good evening, guys.
Good, and yourselves?
I'm good, Ruby, yeah. All's well, good. Thanks be to God.
Good weekend, all you had. Flat out on the couch?
No, I was out and about the usual. Bit of boat, Ruby, yeah. Bit of boat. Yeah. I was at a match Friday night. So a bit of the couch then on Saturday. Watched a couple of the finals yesterday, FA Cup football as well. So, yeah. Mixing and matching.
Yeah.
Were you in Croke Park, Austin?
I was actually, yeah. I was in Croke Park. It was sun-drenched and got eyes on both games. So, good weekend. Got eyes on lots of sport, and in particular, I suppose all the National League finals. So there was a lot to digest.
Good. Andrew, we'll start with you. What was your sporting highlight from the weekend?
My sporting highlight from the weekend, I mean, probably to leave you guys at the main stuff, I watched the end of the golf, the Houston Open yesterday. And paid lots of attention to round four. And it was very interesting. Obviously, Min Woo Lee, the Australian guy, he actually closed it out. Scottie Scheffler came back very strongly towards the end. But the young Australian went on to win his first PGA Tour event. Fantastic moment for him. But what caught my eye was the man on the bag was a fella called Bo Martin, who Alan has met before.
Yeah, Bo. Bo on the bag for
Bo
no
was
way.
On the bag for Min Woo Lee. And Bo used to be on the back for Shane Lowry. Most people would remember Bo's beard as he walked alongside Shane as Shane won the Open in Royal Port Rush. And great, he's a great character, Bo, and he's a lovely man. I think he's from County Down as well. And he is great fun, and he's a great character, and he's a big personality. And it was great because Min Woo Lee was playing with a Argentinian guy called Alejandro Tosti. Oh, and obviously Tosti,
love the pronunciation.
Yes,
there.
Tosti had obviously
years of practice.
They were in the final pairing, so obviously they came in and they were both up there. Min Woo Lee had a couple of shots ahead, but as they started, Min Woo started to get birdies and Tosti didn't. He was getting bogeys and he got very annoyed very early on. And at a certain point, he called over the match referee to complain about slow play from Min Woo Lee, trying to, you know, direct head games, full on head games. And the ref sort of, you know, noted it, ignored it. And then a couple of holes later then, the Argentinian himself decided the best way would be for him to slow down play. But it was great because Bo was there and he was in his ear saying, don't mind this fella, you know, don't worry, you just play your shot. But it was remarkable. It was a remarkable performance from the young Australian, and great to see him get his first PGA Tour win. And since Bo has come on the bag, he's done really well. His percentages have got really, really good. So it is obviously a combination that works in the dynamic between both player and caddy, which is such important in the professional game of golf, is very, very tight. And you can see that they're both enjoying the relationship. Anyway, great to see a young fellow win his first tournament.
Absolutely.
And that was my highlight of the weekend.
It certainly was. Alan, what was yours?
So, Ruby, I have two. One is more just an honourable mention because obviously we're keeping an eye on the FA Cup and we'll discuss it in further detail later on. But I fancied Crystal Palace. So they've gone through and there's a player called Eberechi Eze, who's probably one of my favourite at the moment in the league. He's phenomenal. And there's another midfielder, Adam Wharton. And these are two lads who are far too good for Crystal Palace. They'll be playing with one of the top five teams, I think, next year.
Or even Manchester United.
Or Manchester United. But these are the players Manchester United, to get back to the glory they should be looking at. Brilliant players. So Eze was at the heart of everything good for Crystal Palace. And it's great to see them in the semi-final. But I'm going to throw out a name here for the three of you.
Oh, go on.
And I want you to tell me if you've ever heard the name Moses Dyer?
I've heard of plenty of Moses.
The All White New Zealand guy plays for Galway.
Yeah, you've heard well done, Andrew.
And
10 out of 10.
Twice against Bowes the other night.
So Moses Dyer is a new signer for Galway United. And I was in Dalymount watching them play Bohemians on Friday night. And he scored two goals. They won 2-0 and they're top of the league, going really, really well. But I had to look a little bit deeper into Moses Dyer's career. And he's a New Zealand lad, as I said. But he started off with Eastern Suburbs. You know those well-known that well-known team from
New
Zealand?
Was that around the Burning Bush moment? That's the only Moses I know.
Well, the two goals this fella scored on Friday night, I'd say he probably had a Moses moment himself over the years.
Coming to God.
Then he went to Floro in Norway for 2 years, Division 3 team. Then he spent 3 seasons at Valor in Canada. Then a season at FC Tulsa in America. Then he had a season at Vancouver FC in Canada. And then he had another season with Pacific FC in Canada and finds himself on the west coast of Ireland. And if anyone hasn't seen the goal that he scored on Friday night, the second goal, look it up, because it's probably, I know we're only 7 weeks into the season, but it's going to be there as a goal of the season contender. It was phenomenal. So Moses Dyer is my highlight of the weekend.
So he's got half the amount of clubs that you played for.
At least mine were well known, Andy.
Yeah. God, you really pulled out of the bag there.
Didn't he? Yeah, go on, Asti, try and back that up now.
Oh God, I detect that one. Mine isn't. We'll have to move from Andrew's one from slow play. Mine was a fast play in Croke Park, and young Jack Bryant, I was only in the stadium about 15 minutes, and the game was 4 minutes old for Offaly. And I suppose you're always looking for some, you know, piece of beautiful isolated skill. And I suppose with the new rules and everything, there are more of these what they're calling 1v1 kind of contests. But he got a ball just inside the arc and just turned his man, cut inside, got a bit of space, and absolutely unleashed a rocket into the top corner past the Kildare goalkeeper. I know, Ruby, you mightn't like to hear it, but I just thought, in terms of a moment, for a young guy and the confidence that he showed, but I also think just in terms of where the game is now in creating those 1v1 contests, and that we're getting to see more skills like that, that guys aren't being sort of, you know, clobbered with two and three guys around them. So I just thought it was a brilliant moment from a young guy that went on to have an exceptional game as well. He clipped in at 1-3, but it was one of those, I was literally only, you know, settled in my seat and I was out of it, you know. It was
a rocket,
absolute thunderbolt. It was some strike.
Instinct.
Absolute instinct, you'd have to say it was, yeah. Like if a Ronaldo or a Messi or
there's something special about a Gaelic rocket out of the hands, isn't there?
Absolutely. Like it was just through the laces. He caught it so clean, and literally the Kildare keeper was just, you knew there was just nothing he could do about it. It was nestled in the top of the stanchion before he even just looked around. And it was just such a brilliant moment.
Classic. My highlight of the weekend was Colley not answering the phone when I rang him on Saturday morning.
Tell them why.
Why?
Tell them why, Ruby.
Do you know why? Because I come on here week after week and all that Alan Colley does is give out stink about VAR, and it's ruining the game and it shouldn't be there, and VAR this, VAR that, VAR the other. I'd say Drogheda United would love if VAR was working on Friday night.
Well, they would, but it's been highly contentious, Ruby. We'll tell them why I didn't answer first, because I was midst team talk with our under-12s.
Oh.
And there's no way even the great Ruby Walsh was interrupting that team talk.
I was ringing you to say, goal that was a goal. I was actually wondering, is there some rule about a six-yard box or something? How could it not have been a goal?
Well, this is the thing. It's been highly contentious over the weekend. And in that moment, Ruby, the decision was given, and technically the ref, what I'm being told, is that he was right, because it was for encroachment. And if you look at Warren Davis, who was the goal scorer after he closed down the goalkeeper, his starting position, you can argue whether he was on the line.
I froze it back, stopped it and looked it up, highlighted and enlarged it in Everton.
Brilliant.
Ruby's a professional.
I do this for a living.
Love
when it. When the Cork player kicked the ball, the draw of the player is outside the box.
Brilliant. And I'm so glad you've cleared that up and clarified it, Ruby. And I wish you were on Twitter to clarify it for some of the clowns that were texting me as well over the weekend. But
Referee looks around, he's in the box. But that doesn't mean he wasn't outside the box when it started.
Well, and this is the point. And the unfortunate thing about that decision as well, there was a few kind of high-profile refereeing errors, if you like to call them that, over the weekend, which isn't good. And people, again, are kind of discussing whether the standards are good enough. And I don't think they are, to be honest with you. But anyway, that incident on Friday night, Ruby, I'm glad you said it, because I also had a still from the Drogheda camp of him standing outside the box. But the unfortunate thing about that actual rule, because everybody's telling me the laws of the game and all this. So it's actually good play from the centre forward, because once the goal kick is taken and it's passed back, for anyone that didn't see it, the centre half takes a short goal kick to the goalkeeper. The goalkeeper then makes a hames of it by delaying too long on the ball, and the centre forward, who bursts a gut to run 15 yards to close him down, gets his rewards by closing him down, and the ball is diverted into the goal. He's punished for good play and for a bit of initiative and showing kind of positivity, an attacking approach, just because the goalkeeper made a hames of it. Yet the linesman was flagging. What I'd love to know is, why didn't the referee blow it up, or the linesman actually flag it before it got to the stage where a goal was scored, and they would have cut out all the messing if they were going to blow it up? But yet I watched Man City take about 15 similar goal kicks yesterday, and every Bournemouth player would have been standing on the line, and not once was it blown up. If you look at a penalty kick, Ruby, every penalty kick that I've ever seen, every player is standing on the line. And yet if a goalkeeper saves it and a fella runs in, they might call it up then for encroachment, but they're not standing outside the box. They're all standing on the line.
On the whitewash.
Well, I actually was ringing you to see, was there a rule? Did they have to play the ball forward, or could he play it back from the goalkeeper? That's what I was ringing to find out. So I'm glad that you didn't answer, because we can have this discussion on air and you can educate us all. Well, that's why it was the highlight.
Yeah, and that's why, and in fairness, sometimes the laws of the game can be kind of, not everybody may understand them, but once the ball is played by the centre half, the ball is in play. So he had he was fully in his rights to close the goalkeeper down, but then the debate turns to, was he on the line or was he outside the line?
And the moral of the story is, if there had been VAR, it would have been a goal.
I actually don't think it would have, Ruby, because they're telling me technically the ref got it right, because there's, well, you'd argue over your still or their still, because they'd argue then over whether his foot was on the line or not.
Well, you have to see whatever the Kildare Office of VAR authorises
submits.
But it was a nonsense. It really was, because people were bamboozled by it over the weekend. And it was a clear goal in my eyes. Luckily enough, Drogheda got back into the game. Even the penalty that Cork were awarded in the second half was a bit, or close to the end of the first half, was a bit dubious as well, shall we say. But yeah, just the standards alone. There was another one, a second yellow was given up in Tala for Derry City, which was a poor call in my eyes as well. And it's just week after week, there was a sending off for Kian Cavan in the showgrounds as well. Never, he's actually going for a shot, and his follow through carries him into the player and he gets sent off. So few iffy decisions that need looking at.
We should mention one of the weekend highlights for everyone, although none of us actually mentioned it, was the Irish women's rugby team and their brilliant victory against Italy in Parma.
Incredible.
Yesterday. And I mean, 8 tries away from home after a disappointing performance and result against France the previous week. The pressure was all on them. And I suppose we have to give them a very honourable mention.
100%. They really did deliver in terms of running 8 tries and clearing
and
over 50
stop.
Points. Yeah, they were relentless. Yeah, no, it was a super performance. And great to see it that they've turned things around again.
Yeah.
I'd say it was the result was disappointing against France, but the performance was.
Performance
was good.
But having made huge strides in such a short space of time.
Huge.
I think they made 31 handling errors against France, and they made less than 10 the other day. So yeah. I suppose there were a lot of the elements against France were great, Ruby, but there were things that really disappointed them in terms of a squad that they didn't execute, or they felt they'd let themselves down.
But you as a manager then, Austin, surely you would expect players to make more mistakes against better opposition than against lesser opposition, would you?
Yeah, I suppose like the tempo of the game, and I suppose when you do play better opposition, the things that are always killed in those games are you have less time and less space, so you can come up with maybe more handling errors and that against a better opposition. But I suppose that's the challenge, to be tidier in those moments. But those are generally the two things that are squeezed on you when you do come up against better opposition is time and less space. So yeah, you would expect maybe a higher volume.
Any more highlights?
No, I'm happy with that lot.
Okay, we will.
No low light, no low light, Alan. No.
The refereeing decisions.
Okay, all right. Okay. Right. Goddamn officials. Right, we will back and plenty more chat. We're going to talk Gaelic games and the Allianz League finals after this break.
Game on. Gaelic football.
Welcome back to Game On. Austin O'Malley, we're going to look back at all the league finals at the weekend and start at the bottom and work our way up. Goals win games, and Limerick got their fair share of them to beat Wexford.
They did, yeah. And look, that was the foundation of their performance, really. I suppose they hit three majors. Tommy Childs, Darrow Shukru, and Peter Nash came in and got a really vital one at the end as well. Wexford, like, were in this game all along. And even when the Hooter went, there was only 2 points in it. But I just think they were inefficient in front of goal. When you look through maybe some of the statistics even there, I think their shot efficiency, they ended up with 37 shots on goal and only converted 16. So they're at about 43%. So really, really, that hurt them, you know. when you look at the game in the totality, like, that it was in the balance for long, long stages. I know every time Wexford got up ahead of steam, Limerick managed to counter and get a green flag, and it just gave them that bit of breathing space. And as I said there at the end, like, Wexford had possession of the ball when the hooter went, and they were looking for that two-pointer to draw the game, but unfortunately they hit it wide. But like, I suppose from both perspectives, Limerick will be delighted to win it, and obviously both of them are promoted, so it was a good game on the balance. I thought Wexford had some standout performers in Owen Porter, Martin O'Connor, which is a lovely subplot there. Martin O'Connor, actually, I thought he had a fine game, and he's a man that's actually based in Frankfurt in Germany, and he makes the trips back and over. So we're talking in a time when there's so many, you know, pressures on intercounty footballers, and guys who talk about what they put into it, but this is a guy that's flying back home from Frankfurt to make games
every weekend.
Yeah, he's there. Yeah, and a great young fella. I remember I had him actually as a fresher in UCD when I was coaching the team, and just a super guy with a super attitude. So I'm not surprised in that.
That is some goals, were Wexford a little bit naive? I mean, they had so much possession, but they just didn't seem to know what to do with it.
Yeah, they certainly were up front, and they had a couple of goal opportunities as well that they spurned. Shane Petty got in for when he came back at the post. But just in that final third, when you look at it, I think Park Hughes at wing forward kicked 2 points, and outside of that, I think their front six only hit a point from play between, you know, so just their return wasn't there, and they lacked a little bit of composure in their final third. Had loads of possession, had equally as much possession as Limerick, but Limerick again just had that ability to score goals, and they finished. There were three very, very good goals and very good finishes.
And Ruby, I know you were keeping a very close eye on the Kildare game, but what was great, I mean, both teams, they played really well yesterday. It was a really, really good first game. But the excitement in Offaly when they won it really, I was more excited for them just to see their reaction.
Yeah, I'm glad you were. Delighted for them. Chuffed to bits.
Chuffed.
And they'll be out again this weekend with the hurlers. Great for Offaly. Delighted for them. But yeah, look, Austin, it was a good game, but Offaly just always looked the better team than Kildare yesterday.
They did, yeah. They looked on the balance of it right through. I was in there, like, so, you know, to see even Offaly up close and personal, like, they just had a lot of power, a lot of pace, very incisive, used the ball really, really well again. And, like, I suppose some of their key guys again, the likes of Cormac Egan, I thought he had a super, super game, and a real act of defiance there at the end in terms of the goal that he scored. Like, he burrowed his way in, you know, between two Kildare defenders and back of the net, and the man that I mentioned earlier as well, obviously Jack Bryant. So Offaly are in a good place. Like, I thought Kildare probably had enough possession, obviously, to win the game as well, and, like, just were a little bit wasteful in terms of that. But I think on the balance of it, as you said there, Offaly did look the better outfit, and looked a little bit more robust in terms of what they were going after, and they really sort of cut Kildare open with those sort of lines of running that they had from back to front as well. So I thought they were full value in the end.
I thought they were too. Kildare kicked plenty of wides, didn't they? Brian Flanagan's looking for a bounce. They play Westmead in the Leinster Championship, and, like, to avoid Tailteann Cup football, Kildare have to get to the Leinster final.
They really do, yeah, they really do. And there'll be nothing given against Westmead, who they have coming up. Westmead, albeit that they were relegated, like, put a lot of good football together, and drew at Roscommon on the last day out, came from 12 behind. So they'll really want to be on their guard there. And Brian Flanagan, I suppose he's looking to really, I suppose, crack the whip now and look for a performance there. And he'll want to get a little bit more from the likes of Derek Kerwin and Alex Byrne and these guys. You know, these are their big leaders that need to step up now and really drive into this campaign. But like, they've started the league really, really well, but I think they've lost the last 3 out of 4. So, yeah, they need a little bit of a bounce again.
And, Austin, a word on Mickey Hart. I mean, just when you think he can't achieve more, that is the sixth National Football League crown that he has been responsible. He's led a team to.
Yeah.
I mean, incredible consistency.
It's incredible when you think of his longevity, and, like, anyone that's involved in the game knows the energy that goes into coaching and what he's given to the game. And, you know, when you get to his age and you get that amount of mileage in the clock, it's just so clear that he's still so passionate about it, and the proof is in the pudding. He's still, you know, managing to get a tune out of teams and that. And I suppose Mickey's big thing, you know, in terms of motivation and his experience there that he's brought, like, he's an All-Ireland winner, multiple All-Ireland winner with Tyrone, and you said there, like, he has delivered 6 National League titles now with, I think it's 4 different teams. He had a 3 and 4 with Louth, a Division 1 and 2 in Tyrone, Division 1 in Derry, and now a Division 3 in Offaly. So, you know, he's a guy that just has given so much to the game, and you know, you can only imagine a dressing room with Mickey Hart in it when he speaks, in terms of the retention of the information and how guys would be wired up and dialed in.
A couple of the post-match interviews yesterday, a couple of the Offaly players had mentioned him and what a huge influence he has been inside the dressing room. So when they're all saying the same thing, it's usually true.
And just for, you know, particularly with that, you know, that Offaly team, when you look at it, I think they had yesterday, I think they had seven from that under-21 team that won a number of years ago. So they are quite young, and to have someone of the experience and the calibre of Mickey Hart to guide them and them to look up to, they're in a really, really good spot there. But Declan Kelly as well, for bringing him in, you know, and to share that space with Mick. It says an awful lot about him and the humility of the man as well. Sometimes, you know, managers, you know, they want to be the sole voice and so on. But Declan has done an extraordinary job there in terms of winning under 20. And then, you know, so Offaly are in a good space, and they've invested really heavily in their underage systems of late as well. And I suppose under the guidance of Michael Deignan as chairman as well, they put a lot of good things in place. So there's a lot of good stuff happening
for both codes as well.
Yeah, for both codes.
But it's almost, and Ruby, you'll probably find this with Willie Mullins, it's almost like a presence, is it? Mickey Hart, or the greats have that presence.
Yeah, I guess presence is one thing, but I suppose the calibre in terms of, well, and the experience when you've
won. I know, but I mean, when he walks into the dressing room straight away, commands that respect,
commands
and people
respect
sit up and
attention.
Notice.
Yeah, so when he delivers his message, it's probably a little bit more, there's more punch to it than a guy that wouldn't be, you know, that wouldn't have the experience or the middles to back it up.
Looks like the kind of person you'd head to cross.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's a good thing as well, though, Ruby.
Absolutely.
Because that's gone. I think that's gone from coaching in a lot of places, that it's almost like you can't be that. Mm. But there's definitely a place for that as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think so, in terms of, you know, I think it comes back to a lot of it is values for me. You know, if there's someone that has a really clear value set and they've you know, a man or a woman of principle, and you know what you're going to get with them, and you know there's a line,
yeah,
then I just think it does raise standards, and that's what he's big about, and I think that's what he's done in everywhere he's gone, in terms of raising standards, raising expectations from the group and from the individuals, and to really elicit and evoke, you know, more in terms of performance and more for that they expect more from themselves and to get it out of themselves.
Speaking of standards, Ross Common were a good bit off Monaghan's standard.
They were, yeah, they were, in fairness. I thought Monaghan, I really enjoyed watching Monaghan. I thought with what they brought to the game, the power, the pace they played it, but also just they have a sprinkling of really, really, you know, really, really good young players. I'm really, really impressed with Stephen O'Hanlon. You know, he sort of had a huge season last season, but he's built on this again, and it's great to see him up and running. But not alone him, but Michael Bannigan as well, young Conor McCarthy since they put him back to seven, and obviously Rory Beggin as well. I know he's no young lad, but he had an unbelievable performance. But I just thought overall it was a really, really entertaining game. Some great scores kicked. It was like Roscommon were in it, I think, up to about maybe the 58th minute, and then just it was just sort of Monaghan just hit the night through in that last quarter, and they brought in Jack McCarron, who, like, if any team can afford to keep that guy on a bench and bring him in, he's a superb striker of the ball, one of the best forwards around in the country, and you know he came away at 1-2 there. So Monaghan are in a good place, and just thinking of coming in there, I was just looking at Ulster again. It'll be a fiercely contested Ulster championship again when you see the likes of Monaghan on the rise and that.
It most certainly will. Kevin McStay looked a disappointed figure yesterday afternoon.
Yeah, I'd say disappointed from the perspective of just in terms of, and you spoke about before, about performance levels. Mayo never hit the level in terms of performance that they would have probably expected from themselves, or that the trend coming into the game would have suggested, in terms of they were sluggish enough, obviously, early doors in the National League, but they really had a sea change or a step change up in Armagh that second half, and they'd driven on, and they'd obviously beaten Kerry previously a couple of weeks ago, and like it was chalk and cheese in terms of the performance from Castlebar a number of weeks ago, where they bet Kerry and, you know, sort of held them at arm's length. But yesterday in Croke Park, I just thought they never really brought what you'd class their A game to it. Like, and after, I think, you know, Kerry got that goal, really it was pretty much, you know, very dominant from Kerry, even though they missed quite a bit as well. But Mayo have a lot of work to do. I think that the key things that stood out for me in that game, and I think this will be a signal to maybe all teams in terms of the Motherwell game and where it's at the moment, and what Kerry have in terms of the ingredients to exploit the new rules. It was very clear yesterday, Kerry's kicking game in Croke Park was the differentiator. Their ability to move ball from back to front through the boot, and the energy that you're actually saving in Croke Park when you do that. Mayo on the other side of it, They were very, very laborious and slow in their build-up, and everything went through the hands. And by the time they got it to a score and position, Kerry had numbers filtered back, and they were pretty abrasive. But, I mean, when you look at the Kerry performance, I just thought the likes of Paddy Clifford was... He was surgical-like in terms of the way he opened Mayo up with the boot and moved the ball on. And, you know, there was a couple of brilliant clips of the way he done that. But Kerry, that presence that they have on the 40 when they turn teams over to get the ball and use it. And as I said, they save so much energy. And obviously with David inside, he'd a mixed afternoon probably by his own standards, but still was very good. He had 5 wides, 4 from play. But Kerry also, I just thought, their centre-back position, which probably was, I thought, for them over the last couple of years, not that it was a problem, obviously they were kind of playing with a plus one dropping off, but I thought Mikey Breen has brought a lot of solidity to them there, and he's also a very, very good kicker. He put one beautiful ball across to David Clifford there in the first half as well. So Kerry to me just looked like to have all the ingredients, and that saying, I suppose, that was without Sean O'Shea, who's to come back, Dermot O'Connor. So their bench is quite strong as well, and Thomas Sullivan came in at the end there and brought a bit of electricity to the whole thing as well. So
their defence looked very strong. I mean, when Mayo got up to the arc, it just looked like they didn't know where to go. There was no penetration at all.
And I suppose when you're playing that type of system, if you're slow and build up and you allow a team to set up and get numbers back, the smart thing is that you've got to send runners beyond that first line of defence to try and pull people away. But Mayo weren't doing that. They were handling a lot of, you know, it looked really tidy and it was back and forth, but there was no penetration. There was no breaking lines in behind those unselfish runs where you're flushing out to bring people with you to create actually a better 1v1 kicking situation for players. So they have a bit of work to do. And obviously they have a quick turnaround coming into Sligo. So, but you'd expect them, you know, they would have enough about them to freshen themselves up during the week and put in a big, big performance now against Sligo coming the weekend.
What will Sligo think looking at that?
They're ready. Believe me, they're ready.
Well, you know, funnily enough, thinking about it, yeah, like Sligo, they had Galway Bet last. Do you remember that first time you were here? You were at it, yeah. You were at it for that goal. But I think what will Sligo learn? If you're Sligo looking at that, and it's a great opportunity for Sligo, obviously, because they have an extra game to look at Mayo, to analyse, to see where they are. But they probably would be targeting Mayo's probably that bit of a slow build-up and so on, and that if we can take some ingredients from the way Kerry moved the ball quickly through the boot. Now you need the ingredients to do that. Good kickers, and Sligo have good kickers.
I think Carabine is a big miss, though, isn't he?
He is a big miss. He's a super.
He'd be
player.
A player perfect for that.
Perfect for that type of role. So it'll be interesting to see. Sligo have had a mixed, probably national league, but they will come to Castlebar fresh and ready. And I'd say they'd be looking to really hit Mayo early, given that it's the quick turnaround, you know.
The standout game next weekend, though, is Donegal and Derry, Ulster Championship. What are you expecting? New rules, Ulster football, what do you think is going to happen?
Oh, well, I suppose everything on the compass would point towards that it would be a Donegal win. I think, you know, with the way they've probably opened the league, it looked like that they clearly went after to get that sort of magic 6-point number or whatever, even though it wasn't this year because the team went down at 7. But they clearly, I think, their emphasis, you know, or their eyes... We're firmly focused on this. So I expect Donegal to come, you know, just absolutely, you know, gunning for this. Derry, you know, you would think that they're quite brittle after being relegated and not, you know, winning a game in across the National League. But again, I've said this to you, Ruby, probably previous and in here, that Derry have put together a lot of patches of good football within what they've done. So, like, all of that off the table, you're probably going to get absolute fireworks. I think it's in Ballybuffet. So I'd be expecting Donegal to come really high energy and go after this and come through it. But I wouldn't be surprised if it was tighter maybe than people thought, given the quality that Derry have in their team. When you look at like Conor Glass, Rogers, McGuigan, all of these standout guys, you'd be expecting these guys to really stand up now and go after this.
Yeah, 2:00 in Ballybuffet next Sunday is that one. Can I ask you a question about... Obviously, we've had the new rules for a couple of months, for the whole league campaign. There's been a couple of tweaks.
Yeah.
How much have teams been able to hold back until the championship? Is it possible to have a couple of various elements which you're practicing in at home, on the training ground, and you're not going to execute on Sunday because we're waiting for the big match against Sligo or Derry or Donegal?
I think you're right. And I was thinking about this. It's amazing you asked the question, because I was thinking about this yesterday. And I think the one facet of the game that I think there could be great growth in, and I'm not sure if people are drilling, and it's a big one in the game, is the actual kick out. And I was looking at it yesterday, and most teams, like, when you look at it, they've on their short kick out has just gone either to left or right of the box of the arc. That's just been the short one, really. And the long has just been bombed either left, right or centre. So I still think that there are huge areas far to pick off kickouts in that, just beyond, we'll say, the arc and the other 45. I haven't seen an awful lot of teams try and clear out boxes of space to get people on that really quick, which is it's kind of a shorter one, but there's loads of air. So I'd be well surprised that, you know, definitely teams are going to be holding one or two little trump cards up their sleeve that they haven't shown already. And I think that could be an area, because it's such a big area. Mayo yesterday got absolutely pillared in the air off their own kick out and so on. And even on breaking ball and that, like, we got cleaned out as well. So I think that there's definitely an area there that I'd say coaches are looking and working on. And a kick out is always a nice one, because it gives you a platform getting off. You want to be still trying to get off. You know, the old game, you were looking always at sort of 80% of your own kick out and 30% of the opposition. So
surely it's something like, Austin, I often find this in say a really good header of the ball. So you'd remove them out if you're taking a corner kick or a free kick. So you take out their best kind of two or three best headers of the ball, and you move them out so that you can pinpoint maybe just one, and it becomes a 1v1 type thing. Like, I'm looking at a lot of the long kick outs, and there's bodies going up contest them, which it's just good, and it's old school GAA. But as you says, as people try to kind of come up with new ways, surely it'd be a case of bringing three or four bodies away out of the pack and isolating just a 1v1 kind of for a kick out.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes there's a sort of a bit of smoke and mirrors where that you might take your biggest and tallest aerial threat or two of them and position them to one side, which then would force the opposition to go that side with their biggest aerial threat.
Yeah, but you're not hitting it today.
You're not hitting it. You're actually then create a mismatch on the other side or in those little other pockets that you can get it off. So that's the little bit of clever stuff that I'm sure, like, so Jim McGuinness and these guys, they'll be rooting over, and they'll be looking for those type of little mismatches that they could get, and where they could pilfer, because the kick out, primary possession of your own, is a big thing, and particularly if you win it and you can slip it, you're in if the opposition have pressed up and you're left with 3v3 or 1v1s inside. So
Austin, you think between now and the end of the All-Ireland Football Championship, we are going to see lots of surprises?
I would hope so, because I just think the calibre of the coaching out there, and obviously people have been hit with a lot of the different amendments on the fly, you know, as the rules have changed. But I still think, like, if you're clever enough, you're definitely holding one or two little plays back. And I thought kickouts are definitely the other one, I suppose, maybe is the 3v3 up front that I've looked at, that I like the positioning of those people. And I just said it there, maybe about like a lot of them are holding the three of them deep. The idea of pulling one of those out to the top as a link player, as Kerry done yesterday and found great joy of it when they turned the opposition over. So the positioning, the body position of those people within the actual positions up top, there's a bit of tinkering that you could find dividend, I think, there, space as well. So
there's Bannisterey all over the island at the moment, pulling secret files out, Ruby.
Pulling secret files.
Quick, wait till they get a load of Section 7B. We'll be back talking football after this break.
Game on. Association football.
Welcome back to Game On. It is 6:42 this Monday evening. I'm delighted to say that Alan Cawley is here to talk football with us. We're going to talk League of Ireland first, and also and Stockley Park. Ireland's ended at Stockley Park, which is in Kildare. Ruby Walsh joins us as well. Do ITV Racing let you take home that van all the time?
No, they show me how to use it. Pat's on top, Alan Cawley.
Pat's on top, Ruby, and by the skin of their teeth, really, because they were behind for 4/5 of the match, if you like, in Waterford on Friday night. But two late goals, and they have players capable of this, moments of magic. Brandon Kavanagh is that player, but they have plenty like him. And Stephen looks for that as well in his players. He loves a flair player or a game changer, if you like. So Darragh Lee was unfortunate for Waterford. He conceded in the 88th minute trying to defend a cross into the box that I think it came from Kavanagh as well. But then in injury time, they had a free kick on the edge of the box, and that man, Brandon Kavanagh, stepped up. And if anyone hasn't seen this as well, curled a lovely left-footed shot into the top corner, and they nicked the game. And it's very Stephen Kenny-like, Ruby. At Dundalk, there used to be loads of games like this where they'd score late. Alex Ferguson, during his reign, Man United score late goals. And it's almost the case, the odd time people would think it was lucky. I remember Shamrock Rovers went through a spell, the same thing, a couple of seasons back, scoring loads of late goals. And as I said, people would think it's lucky. It's not luck to me. If you're basically pummeling a team, or you're grinding them down with attack after attack, that eventually they just cave in and you do score. Now, I'm not saying that was the case on Friday night for Pats, but I do think they had a lot of the ball towards the end of the game, and eventually, as I said, a team collapses and you get a couple of late goals. But it's a huge result, very Stephen Kenny-like, and as you say, it puts them top of the table.
Just about, as you said, is on goal difference, and Galway United are the only side in the SSE Airtricity Premier League who haven't lost.
Yeah, and I watched them on Friday night, Ruby, and the difference with Stephen Kenny's team and the difference with Galway, it's night and day, because Stephen Kenny loves...
And Moses,
yeah, because he loves to play an attacking brand of football, as we know it, Stephen, whereas John Caulfield makes no bones about the fact that he sets up with a very strong physical team, tough to beat, and that's what they are. And then they may have a game changer in the likes of Moses up front. And what's lovely about this kind of little subplot is the brilliant rivalry that was created over the last kind of 6-7 years when Stephen was successful at Dundalk. John Caulfield was the one challenging him with Cork City and overtook him as well in winning the league title with Cork and a couple of cups. So John Caulfield has been very successful where he's gone. But to think he's gone to Galway and the job that he's done now, having them top of the table, if you like, just behind on goal difference, he's done a phenomenal job. And as I say, Ruby, there's more than one way to win a football match, and he certainly doesn't play your old conventional kind of fashionable way. He plays his own style that's tough to beat, with strong physical players all over the pitch, and they were quite comfortable as well, to be fair, against Bohemians on Friday night. They scored with their first attack, so they're quite happy to sit in and soak up pressure. Bohemians had loads of the ball but without really penetrating. Then when Bohemians got on top, when they were chasing the game in the second half, still a lot of kind of shots on the edge of the box, blocks, not really any clear-cut chances. But as I said, for anyone that hasn't seen the breakaway and Moses Dyer's second goal, it was phenomenal. And that was it, 2-0. They were comfy and happy. And I think they'll have a good strong season, Ruby.
Buzzers Sligo Rovers have lost 5 each from 7 games, but Drogheda United should be top. They're on 12 points. They should have had a goal at the weekend. They should be on 14. And they should be top of the league.
Yeah, and Kevin Doherty will be delighted to hear you saying that as well, Ruby. But I agree, they should be. Turnaround
from them, even from last year to this year.
Oh, it's phenomenal. It really is, Ruby. Like, the start that they've had is just incredible. They've only conceded 4 goals as well, the best in the league. They've had an unbelievable start. And even though Kevin was bitterly disappointed with, the outcome of the game, he was happy with the point, but he was just disappointed with a couple of those decisions. But overall, and I was chatting to him over the weekend, overall, to have 12 points on the board out of 7 games, he's absolutely delighted. He really is. And they're missing a couple, you could argue, their 2 best players as well. Douglas Taylor is to come back. I think he's a couple of weeks away. And Alicia as well, who was the man of the match in the cup final. He'll be back in a couple of weeks also. So he's done an unbelievable job, Kevin. And not just with the decisions that they should have won, their performance against Cork was unbelievable. They had so many chances, so many shots. Cork did well just to hang in and get the point, but Drogheda deserved it overall with the performance. And as I say, it's been a brilliant start to the season for them.
What about Shells? How's Damien Duff? Is he happy, angry, giving out, content?
He's always kind of angry in some way or given out in some way, but then on the other hand, he's probably happy also, Ruby. His emotions kind of tend to go up and down, which is a good thing because he's very emotive and that's why we love him. But he'd be delighted to get the 3 points at the weekend against Sligo Rovers. They got off to a fast start, came out of the traps. Sligo Rovers were kind of the architects of their own downfall with a couple of mistakes early on and allowed Shelburne into a 2-goal lead. And if there's one team you don't allow a 2-goal lead, it's Shelburne, because they're very good defensively. But Sligo Rovers, by all accounts, put in a brilliant second half performance, and they really had Shelburne rattled to the point where Duff came out himself and said he was just delighted to get out of there with the 3 points. That Sligo played very well. But the problem that's killing Sligo Rovers is the concession of these early goals and giving themselves a mountain to climb in games, Ruby. Then you're chasing the game and it kind of looks as though you may have played well, but I often find it can be a false reading of the game as well if you're a couple of goals down, because the game becomes false and you're just chasing it because you're throwing caution to the wind, where it may not be the case if it was nil all. But they need to get themselves up and running. The 4 points on the board out of 7, they're really beginning to struggle. But from Shelburne's point of view, 12 points out of 7, they're only a point behind Pats and Galway. Even though it wasn't the best performance from them, Duff will be delighted just to be sitting on 12.
Rovers and Cork City obviously have a game in hand. What about Derry City?
I've been so disappointed with Derry City. I really have. I've seen them twice now live. Very poor the opening night. I saw them against Sligo, even though they beat Sligo a couple of weeks ago 1-0. But they were very, very poor on the night, and by all accounts at the weekend as well. Now, Shamrock Rovers weren't much better, but it was just a drab affair. I thought they were harshly treated with the sending off. no way was it a second yellow, to be fair to them, but it was still a poor return. And so far out of 7 games, 8 points, they've only scored 5 goals. For the quality they have in their team, Ruby, and the budget and the resources that they're working off as well, they should be, like, you compare that to what Drogheda are working off, it's night and day, it really is. So I think it's been a very disappointing start to the season for Derry City.
And a word on Bose. We spoke about Galway City and their great performance the other night. Huge pressure on the management at Daily Men Park. And there were a lot of people left the game early, and those that stayed weren't too shy about expressing their displeasure.
They were venting their fury. Is that a phrase we could use, Andrew?
Yes, it is a phrase, and you have used it correctly, but it's a lot of pressure there.
No, they were. The natives are very discontent. There's a lot of discontent there, and rightly so, to be fair. Now, in fairness to Bohemians, they didn't play all that bad. It wasn't one of those performances where you're thinking, you know, oh, this is a bit of a disaster and they're not playing for the manager. It was nothing like that. I just find at the moment with Alan Reynolds, he's trying to fit a lot of players into kind of positions, and he just hasn't settled on his best 11 yet. Like, even for the other night, he almost sacrificed the left-hand side of the pitch and played with a box and trying to get 2 10s in, 2 sitting midfielders as well with Moorhan and James McManus. And when it got to the stage where they were so dominant in possession and 1-0 up, you don't need 2 centre midfielders sitting. He could have sacrificed Moorhan and got another attacker on. And then by the time he went to make the substitutions, they got hit with the sucker punch of the second goal, and then it's game over. Mm. So they were just a little bit slow to react, I felt, in that regard. But 5 defeats out of 7, that tells you why the natives are not happy. And
has he got many more matches left?
I don't know, Andrew. I felt the general vibe around the ground on Friday night was that if they lose, he could be gone. Now, I'd hate to see that, but he really is struggling. They're struggling at the moment. They're playing Sligo Rovers on Friday night. Dare I say, if they were to lose that, because Sligo Rovers are bottom, he will be gone.
That's the bottom two. Let's fly through a lesser competition now, the FA Cup. The FA Cup quarterfinals, a competition which you think is much valued in recent years, Alan. Brighton, Nottingham Forest, nil all. Forest win on penalties. Eze, one of your favourite guys on the score sheet for Crystal Palace. They beat Fulham 3-0. Sarr and Nketiah also on the score sheet. Marcus Rashford with 2 goals for Aston Villa. Jacob Ramsey with the other. Aston Villa beating Preston 3-0. And Man City coming from behind to beat Bournemouth 2-1. Haaland missed a penalty, then got one after the break, and Omar Marmoush came up with a big all-important winner. And I think it's their 7th consecutive FA Cup semi-final. 7 consecutive years.
That's phenomenal consistency. Like, for the stick they're getting at the moment, Man City and Guardiola, but like, to be winning the amount of leagues they have and 7 consecutive semi-finals, it really is phenomenal. Do I think they'll go on and win it? I don't, actually, to be honest with you. And not only because my heart says I'd love to see Palace or even Forest win it, but I don't think City are playing well enough to win it either. I thought they got out of jail a little bit yesterday. Forest are playing very well, having a great season. But Crystal Palace are having a phenomenal season. And they're the form team, I think, going into it. Villa are very good as well and very strong. So I think the semi-finals will be set up lovely. And as I said on Friday, and I've said throughout the whole competition, I love Eze. I love Adam Wharton. I'd love to see Palace go on and win the cup. And even that kind of old school club where they still have the old school Selhurst Park, the fans hopping in the corner.
They haven't
sold their soul just yet. So I'd love to see them go on and win the FA Cup.
Ruby, were you happy to see Marcus Rashford on the score sheet? And Porel Anthony at Real Betis, he scored again in the derby.
That Anthony's absolutely flying, so he is absolutely flying. Not a bother on Anthony. And Marcus Rashford, look, I don't know Marcus Rashford, but I think it's nice to see anybody with a smile on their face, and he absolutely most certainly has a smile
that
back
Anthony,
on his face.
That Anthony fella's playing that well, he might get another £100 million move at the end of this season.
I said I'd take 10 for him, to tell you the God honest truth.
Euro.
But anyway, 10 euro. Look, that's old-fashioned games, but what wasn't old-fashioned at the weekend was Munster and Connacht in Castlebar. Keane Tracy's on the line. 27,500 in Castlebar to watch, in Mayo to watch Connacht and Munster. They got entertained, even if they didn't get the result they wanted.
Yeah, absolutely, Ruby. I think you can kind of separate the two things, the occasion and the game itself. I think as an occasion, it absolutely did live up to the billing, like you said there, 27,500 people. It more than tripled what Connacht's all-time record attendance had been. It was a great idea to, you know, get into GA Heartland, try and kind of spread the gospel of Connacht rugby. But as a game and a spectacle, it did feel like a bit of a missed opportunity, I think, for Connacht. Munster were the ones who pitched up, I thought, much better. They were clearly the better team. I know Connacht were in touching distance of snatching a win at the end there, but I don't think they did enough really across the course of the 80 minutes, and they played 55 minutes of that with an extra man, obviously, and Munster had another couple of sin bins later in the game. So I think when Connacht are reflecting on it this morning, they will feel like that was a massive missed opportunity for them to even, I think, impress even more and maybe try and catch a few new supporters. So yeah, disappointing. They're now down at 13th of the table.
Yeah, that's a long way down the table for them. Obviously, they're in Challenge Cup action at the weekend. It is a big weekend. The European Champions Cup is back as well. Leinster, of course, have Harlequins and Croke Park on Saturday. But they'll have been delighted they've gotten out of South Africa at the weekend with a win.
Yeah, like Leinster is such a strange scenario. Most of their first choice players were back in Dublin, obviously, preparing for Harlequins. And they had a pretty young team playing the Sharks, Keane Healy aside. And it was an incredible victory. I know it probably won't get as many of the headlines, but that was one of Leinster's, I would say, great away wins. You look at the calibre of the Sharks team. I mean, I wouldn't fancy being a Sharks supporter, Ruby. You look through them, the amount of Springboks that they have in the team, but they're just woefully underperforming. It just shows, I suppose, how good they are when they put the Springboks jersey on. But look, that was none of Leinster's concern. I thought the way the pack stood up was absolutely outstanding. So Leinster, home and hose, you'd imagine, in terms of securing that first spot. And it would give them, the players that are back in UCD, you'd imagine, a nice little boost going into Croke Park this weekend. I believe they're on track for 60,000 people at Croke Park for a round of 16 game. It's pretty impressive, and another big payday for Leinster.
Absolutely, considering it's Harlequins, it's not even it's not another Irish team like so. I mean, you have travelling fans, incredible crowd that would be. Ulster got a win against the Stormers. They're in for a tough weekend though. Bordeaux Beagles away on Sunday at 12:30 for them in the European Cup. Good to get a win last weekend, but Ulster are going to struggle this weekend, aren't they?
Yeah, I think so. It was huge that they got the win last weekend. They had a really terrible start against the Stormers. I just mentioned how maddening the Sharks are. The Stormers are pretty similar in that, very hard to predict. But they had a fast start, and to be fair, Ulster turned it around. But going away to Bordeaux this weekend, Ruby, you're right. I actually watched a bit of them last night against Racing, and they lost. They don't lose too many games in the top 14. Louis Bier-Berai scored once again. He is just in sensational form. He scored 25 tries in 22 games this season. And I think, yeah, Ulster, you're right, are going to be massively up against it. They've already played them this season and were on the end of a heavy scoreline. And I'd be surprised if it wasn't the same again this weekend, unfortunately.
There'll be lots more talk about this weekend's Champions Cup games between now and Friday. But Keane, we can't let you come on and not talk about the amazing women's performance in Parma yesterday. 8 tries, a bonus point. They should have had 2 bonus points. That performance was so good.
Yeah, they were incredible, Andrew. I think like the upturn over the last 18 months or so in the Irish women's rugby has been remarkable. And even from last week to the French game, they did so many things well. Obviously, didn't get the result, and they spoke about, you know, not wanting these moral victories. And it was really important that they backed it up yesterday in Parma, a place where they endured some heartache a couple of years ago when they missed out on World Cup qualification. But Anna McGann with a hat-trick, absolutely outstanding. Another 7s convert. And I just think, you know, the mixture of the forwards' power and the flair in the backs was really good. And the skills set across the board has just been remarkable, really. And look, the IRFU deserve credit. They've put a really strong coaching ticket in place there who are delivering. The 7s players are now back playing with the 15s. And it just shows what a difference it makes. And in World Cup year as well. So there's good momentum now behind this Irish team. They're going into a break weekend this week. So it was really important that they went into that first break with a big win, which they did. So it's onwards and upwards, I'd say, for them.
And Cian, a lot of people wouldn't have realised that it's been a good while since we've actually won on the road in the Women's Six Nations Championship. So that victory yesterday will mean a huge amount to the squad.
Yeah, like the Women's Six Nations, Andrew, is kind of like 2-tiered, really. Well, actually, probably 3-tiered because England are way out ahead on their own. England are going to play Ireland in Cork in a couple of weeks. That'll be an incredibly tough game. But you're right, Ireland have 3 of the away games are against Italy, Scotland and Wales. 3 games that they should fancy themselves to win. And getting that win on the road yesterday, albeit only in Italy, but that Italian team have actually caused Ireland a lot of problems over the last couple of years. So it should give them massive confidence going forward, both for the Six Nations and what's to come later this year in terms of the World Cup.
Indeed, and that's about all we have time for. Keane Tracy, thank you very, very much for taking our call. Myself and Andrew will be back tomorrow evening. Paul Curry will join us, Mark Langdon, and we'll hear from Orla Keeling as Claire Melia is in the Euro Cup final second leg tomorrow night, Andrew.
Ruby, that's all to come tomorrow. I shall talk to you then.